Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Harry P. Erba, MD, PhD, about the FDA approval of ziftomenib for the treatment of adult patients with relapsed refractory acute myeloid leukemia with a susceptible NPM1 mutation who have no satisfactory alternative treatment options. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Erba discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety findings from the pivotal Phase 1-2 KOMET-001 trial, and the role ziftomenib may play throughout the evolution of the AML treatment paradigm.
We have to review a little bit about how patients with NPM1 mutated acute myeloid leukemia fare with the standard treatments we now have available. NPM1 encodes the protein nucleophosmin. Nucleophosmin has many different functions in all of the cells of our body, mostly in shuttling proteins in and out of the nucleus, building ribosomes, involved in centromere localization, many other different functions. Now, in patients with acute myeloid leukemia, about 30 to 35% of them will have a somatically acquired mutation that turns out to be a frameshift mutation in the last coding exon, exon 12, of the NPM1 gene. And what that does is it throws off the reading frame, and so a nucleolar localization signal that is typically present for nucleophosmin is lost, and instead it's replaced by a nuclear export signal. And so this protein, nucleophosmin, which is typically in nucleoli in the nuclear envelope, is then found in the cytoplasm. In fact, you can diagnose NPM1 mutated AML by staining for nucleophosmin and finding it in the cytoplasm. As I said, this is one of the most common mutations, along with DNMT3A and FLT3 ITD mutations. And in fact, those three mutations often co-occur. The importance of NPM1 is that it is a key driver in leukemogenesis. It is never found in clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate prognosis. In fact, according to the World Health Organization, if you find an NPM1 mutation, regardless of the blast percentage in the right clinical context, that can be used as defining acute myeloid leukemia. And by the International Consensus Conference, if you have 10% or more blasts in the peripheral blood or bone marrow with an NPM1 mutation, that now defines a subtype of acute myeloid leukemia. So it's a key driver in leukemogenesis. And in fact, when present at diagnosis, it is almost always present at the time of relapse disease. These patients can often be identified by very characteristic nuclear morphology of the blast cells with a deep invagination of the nuclear envelope. Also by flow cytometry, these blasts have a myeloid immune phenotype with CD33 and CD13 in expression, CD117, but are either lacking or have much decreased expression of stem cell markers such as HLA-DR and CD34. Now, getting to the importance of this mutation, NPM1 mutations without a FLT3 ITD are considered more favorable risk mutations by both ELN 2022 risk stratification for patients receiving intensive chemotherapy, as well as for patients receiving less intensive chemotherapy with venetoclax and hypomethylating agent-based therapies. But not all patients do very well. In fact, it should be noted in ELN 2022, if the patient also has adverse risk karyotype or a monosomal karyotype, those patients do very poorly and are not considered to have favorable risk. On the other hand, for patients who are older, who receive less intensive therapies, if they also have spliceosome mutations, chromatin modifiers, they'd also have a worse outcome. But if you just look at the patients with favorable risk AML with an NPM1 mutation without a complex karyotype, data from a Swiss registry showed that the 5-year survival of that group of patients with standard 7 and 3, high-dose RSC consolidation with or without auto or allo transplant is only 50%. And this is what we call favorable risk. So it's clear from this that 50% of our patients with NPM1 mutated disease, even though they receive intensive chemotherapy that we currently use, will actually relapse. And there is the potential benefit of a drug like ziftomenib, a menin inhibitor that has shown efficacy in this group of patients with relapse refractory disease. So over the last 10 or more years, we've learned quite a bit about the pathogenesis of acute myeloid leukemia, and specifically the role that the mutated form of nucleophosmin, or the NPM1 gene, takes in driving leukemogenesis. Now, the mutant form of NPM1 has a number of different potential functions. For example, it could actually move tumor suppressor genes out of the nucleus. But the role that we have focused on is the ability of the mutant NPM1 protein to bind to a protein called exportin-1, encoded by XPO1, and actually be brought back into the nucleus and direct gene expression, DNA transcription to the genes that govern a more leukemogenic phenotype. For example, the Hox genes and the MEIS genes, which will block normal leukemia, normal differentiation, block apoptosis, and lead to an accumulation of these immature cells. So mutant NPM1 is brought into the nucleus and directs the transcriptional complex to these gene promoters. And therein lies the potential role of menin. Menin is a chromatin scaffolding protein, also found in all of our cells. And very importantly, it is a building unit for bringing various histone modulators, transcription factors to genes to allow gene expression. And so when NPM1 mutated binds and directs menin to the Hox and MEIS genes, you get upregulation of Hox and MEIS1. And that leads to this leukemogenic phenotype. And in fact, you could show that in NPM1 mutated cells and in patients, for example, that when you block menin, you will get downregulated in these patients with NPM1 mutated disease, you will get downregulation of both Hox genes and MEIS1, and you can get differentiation then of the leukemic blasts. So we've learned quite a bit about the pathogenesis of acute myeloid leukemia with an NPM1. And of course, this has led to the rapid development of multiple menin inhibitors in this clinical space, NPM1 mutated AML. The KOMET-001 study was a phase 1/2 clinical trial for patients with either NPM1 or KMT2A rearranged acute myeloid leukemia who had either relapsed or had refractory disease following prior treatments. And so in this phase 1 study, there was a dose escalation to find a recommended phase 2 dose of ziftomenib in these populations of patients. The single agent development of ziftomenib in KMT2A rearranged AML was actually halted due to a signal for an increased tendency for differentiation syndrome. However, development of ziftomenib is going on in combination with intensive chemotherapy and less intensive chemotherapy in patients with KMT2A rearranged disease. However, the FDA approval is based on the phase 2 study of ziftomenib at the recommended phase 2 dose of 600 milligrams once daily in patients with relapsed refractory NPM1 mutated AML. This has now been published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology in 2025 by Eunice Wang for the investigators. And in this study, we report treating 92 patients with relapsed refractory acute myeloid leukemia with an NPM1 mutation. The median age of the population was 69 years. The primary endpoint of the study was a response endpoint CR or CR with partial hematologic recovery, and that was achieved in 22% of patients, and about almost two-thirds of those were MRD negative using local various MRD assessments of patients. The overall response, if you include a CRI and morphologic leukemia-free state, was 33%. The median duration of these responses was 4.6 months with a median overall survival of 6.6 months. Now, it's important to recognize, given that the responses were only seen in approximately a quarter of the patients, that this actually compares favorably with intensive and less intensive chemotherapies, as published by our colleague Gus Issa from MD Anderson, showing only about a 24% response rate in NPM1 mutated AML that's relapsed or refractory after standard intensive induction chemotherapy. And these patients with relapsed refractory disease prior to menin inhibitors such as ziftomenib had a very dismal outcome. So yes, it's considered favorable risk, but not at the time of relapse. We also learned something very important from this trial, and that is in subset analyses, we saw even higher response rates in patients with IDH1 and IDH2 mutations. We saw similar response rates in patients with FLT3 ITD and co-mutation of NPM1. This is important information, as well as the following. We found that patients who had been either pre-treated with venetoclax or not had very similar CR/CRh rates of around 22%. Now, the reason why this is important is that as these studies have been ongoing, there's been other data being accumulated showing that young patients, especially the much younger adults, who receive intensive chemotherapy regimens such as FLAG-IDA with venetoclax, as shown by the MD Anderson group, or with the antibody-drug conjugate gemtuzumab-azogamycin, as shown by both the Germans and now in a larger study, the United Kingdom, they have very favorable outcomes. But again, relapses will be seen. So knowing that by attacking and inhibiting menin with a drug like ziftomenib gives us an option for our patients who've already been through an intensive standard 7+3 or with high-dose cytarabine consolidation, transplant. Our patients had been through transplant in our study as well. And so it is an option for those patients, as well as patients who have relapsed after venetoclax-containing regimens, given that the single-agent activity was there. Now, turning our attention to the safety here, as you might expect, the most common treatment-emergent grade 3 or greater adverse events were febrile neutropenia, as expected, and cytopenias in these patients. Differentiation syndrome, which can occur with any drug that causes differentiation of leukemic blasts, occurred in about 25% of patients, but only 14% of these were grade 3, and there were no deaths in our study, our phase 2 study, related to differentiation in this part of the clinical trial. QT prolongation is another thing that we are concerned about with drugs that we're using in our patients who are getting azole antifungals and fluoroquinolones, which also cause QT prolongation. However, we found that the rate of QT prolongation above 500 milliseconds was only 9%, 8 out of the over 90 patients in the clinical trial. GI toxicity was minimal. About a quarter of patients had grade 1 or 2 nausea and diarrhea, as might be expected in these patients who are also receiving many other drugs that can have that toxicity, and a relapse of AML, which is also associated with poor oral intake. A curious toxicity that was seen with ziftomenib, and fortunately only grade 1 or 2 in all patients, was pruritus, which in my experience tends to be self-limited and goes away after months of therapy. But that occurred in 23% of our patients. But only 3% of the patients in this phase 2 study actually discontinued treatment due to a ziftomenib related adverse event. There is a growing movement to treat younger patients who are fit for intensive chemotherapy with pretty aggressive regimens in this favorable subset of AML patients, which a standard 7 and 3 and high-dose cytarabine, the Swiss registry data suggests only about a 50% five-year survival with standard 7 and 3 and high-dose ARC. However, the United Kingdom data showed an impact of the FLAG-IDA regimen with or without gemtuzumab azogamycin with much greater survival at 5 years of approximately 80%. And the MD Anderson group reported an 83% three-year survival of these patients with intensive chemotherapy regimens like FLAG-IDA with venetoclax. So if these regimens are going to be adopted in younger fit patients using these effective drugs, relapses will still occur. And so having a drug like ziftomenib is going to be important for those patients because we did not see an impact of prior venetoclax exposure on outcomes with single agent ziftomenib. In older patients, with NPM1 mutations without a FLT3 ITD or RAS mutations also have a very favorable outcome, but relapse often occurs in these patients, possibly due to the fact that these patients often have unfavorable karyotypes or they have spliceosome and chromatin modifier mutations suggestive of a prior myelodysplastic syndrome. But for whatever reason, relapse is pretty common. And so this drug being available to those patients and giving a chance at achieving a remission is important. And of course, in our study, we had patients achieving remission after single agent ziftomenib who were able to then transition and proceed with allogeneic transplant, which would be the only potentially curative option for this group of patients. Where are we going with this drug? Well, as you might imagine, in oncology, when we find an active drug that has a different toxicity profile and different mechanism of action of prior treatments that have been shown to be effective and safe, we combine them. And so in the phase 1 and 2 studies of ziftomenib, as well as other menin inhibitors, there have been cohorts of patients treated with intensive 7 and 3 chemotherapy and high-dose cytarabine with menin inhibitors such as ziftomenib. And that data has been presented at meetings. And these are patients with previously untreated disease. But the same is true with azacitidine venetoclax. That data of the combination of aza with venetoclax with ziftomenib will be presented at ASH in an oral presentation. I presented the 7 and 3 data with ziftomenib at the European Hematology Association meeting in 2025. Of course, to show the real benefit of adding a third drug to these doublets of 7 and 3 or doublets of HMA and venetoclax will require randomized phase 3 studies. And those studies with ziftomenib have launched. The COMET-017 study is an international study for patients with NPM1 mutated AML or KMT2A rearranged AML that are previously untreated. If they are eligible for intensive chemotherapy, they are randomly assigned to get 7 and 3 with high-dose cytarabine with placebo during induction, consolidation, and maintenance, with ziftomenib during induction, consolidation, and maintenance, and a third arm with induction, ziftomenib with induction and consolidation, but not as a maintenance therapy. In the older patients or patients unfit for intensive chemotherapy, we are studying venetoclax with azacitidine with placebo versus venetoclax with azacitidine and ziftomenib. These studies are just starting in newly diagnosed patients, so we have a lot of work still to do.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OnClive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OnClive On Air.